These are dark times. We have few allies. The odds are against us. And they will always be against us. But I can tell you this. If there is any hope of surviving, we must stand against the darkness.
Hello, listeners. Fellow Star Wars... Actually, not fellow Star Wars people. Because that's the whole thing on its own. It's me, Alan Muir. The ginger of gingers.
Isn't Cameron Monaghan the ginger of gingers?
I think I'm older than him.
I think you are too. You're the OG.
None of us are even close to the real OG. And that's exactly why no one knows who he is.
They're going to say Carrot Top.
No. This is a Carrot Top free zone.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Top. Mr. Top.
So, yeah. Me and Gray, that voice you're hearing, or you heard, was Grayden Webb.
Hi, lovely to be here.
And we're gonna just talk about Star Wars Jedi Survivor, the sequel to the hit game from Respawn Entertainment, Jedi Fallen Order. And
but why so late, Alan? That game came out in March, I think.
I think it came out either March or April. It was near when we were doing Game of the Year. We're gonna try to do some stuff with this, like games that we were kind of late to, or games that have released this year that we didn't get around to doing a spoiler cast or a podcast on any type of when in that window of release. We're gonna be just gonna be one on Spider-Man 2 next month, or I don't even know if it's coming out. This game was making the rounds in terms of headlines over a bunch of technical issues, which you'd think that it wouldn't be the case, or it wouldn't be so bad considering the first game. There is a video on our YouTube channel of the first foray of the opening hour and a half.
Forgot you did that. That was a big first foray.
Yeah, it was. Oh god, it was a big file. big file.
You don't record in 4K anymore, do you?
No, because I was recording it. I was recording it on my PC, and considering you played the PC version for a bit, mm-hmm. So I gave you my key that I had, and I played it originally. I was playing it through EA Access or the EA Pro thing, where you can play the first party games for free on PC, and that's where this whole thing starts. The game starts with you on Coruscant, and I just gotta say, I really like the way it feels great returning to Coruscant in terms of story, like in Star Wars video games.
Yeah, that's like
it's been a long while.
Yeah,
no, the last Star Wars game I remember that was on that had you running around Coruscant, not aside from the Lego games, but I want to say it was the Revenge of the Sith game.
Oh wow, it's been a long time.
Yeah, it was like Revenge of the Sith. It was actually ironically, very ironically, around the time when, like, there was Revenge of the Sith, Battlefront 1, Battlefront 2, like that era of LucasArts games.
Mm-hmm.
Shenanigans happen, and not so good shenanigans. We see a return of, or we meet the quote unquote villain that was heavily teased in the initial marketing, the senator who, in the initial lead up to release, was presented as the big bad.
Oh really?
Yeah, if, I don't know if you remember the Utapau senator.
Yeah. I don't know how much marketing I wanted to see, so I don't think
I watched too much. So it's you're under the impression that this guy is gonna be like it's gonna be a big like he's gonna have a Palpatine-esque flair to him, and that he'll be like you'll be on the run or something because it's a Star Wars game and you're playing as a Jedi, so naturally you'll be on the run from the Empire. And nope. He gets killed by, is it the seventh sister or ninth sister? I know it was one of the two from,
I think the ninth.
Yeah, because, and it was a matter of when I first saw that, I was like, oh, she survived. Because, spoilers, but in Fallen Order, it's heavily implied that she's dead because Cal fights her on top of the tree on Kashyyyk, and she gets it's in the movie like in the sequel trilogy, there were no dismemberments or anything like compared to the like to Empire. When Luke gets his hand chopped off, or in Attack of the Clones when Anakin gets his half his arm chopped off, followed by all the terrible things that happened to him in Episode 3.
It ain't Star Wars without a dismemberment.
Yeah, and obviously the games that like. What was it? Jedi Academy, Jedi Outcast. Those games were the king of this moment. Playing as old Cal Katarn and Jaden Kor, respectively. Yeah, Cal is. He's working with Saw Gerrera, who sadly we don't see in the game.
I was quite happy we didn't see him in the game.
Why?
I've never liked Saw Gerrera. Never, ever, not once. He was tolerable in Fallen Order because I was like, I kind of cared. But I remember when he was in Rogue One and I didn't care about him from the Clone Wars he was in. And
he's been in Clone Wars, Rebels.
Ugh.
Bad Batch.
He's just so bland. I don't know why they put him in everything.
Well, it was actually originally it was just Clone Wars, and then honestly, it was Rogue One that put him on the map, so to speak, put him on the star charts. And he's like, it was a mix of Rogue One and the performance that was given to the character.
Yeah. But he's always been the same actor. That's the thing.
Actually, there's like Forrest Whitaker does portray him in Rebels and everything like live action stuff. But in Clone Wars and in Bad Batch, he's actually played by different actor. The actor originated the role.
Oh.
And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because the whole thing with him and Rogue One was it was an older, more far gone Saw Gerrera.
Gotcha.
So you're going through with your team, your strike force. A lot of people die. Simple as that.
Yeah. Like more than half of your team just gets gunned down instantly.
And I don't know. Like I was personally hoping we'd see there's so many other, like so many different characters I was hoping would show up in this game. Kanan or any of the ghost crew.
Yeah, that would have been pretty sick.
Any like clones who have gotten out of after the stuff with Bad Batch, with them being displaced or their services no longer required. It would have been interesting to see some clones working with the, not exactly working with the, I forgot the name that Saw Gerrera's group has.
They're not the Resistance.
No, it's something more, something far more.
I'll look it up.
But yeah, most of them get like half of them get killed. And you're out of everyone that's out of your starting crew, you're left with just one other person who just happens to be the new guy, who ironically was previously in Star Wars before this role, and I'm of course referring to Bode. He played General Rampart on Bad Batch.
Hmm.
And he's in Spider-Man 2 as well as Mysterio.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks, so it was hard to tell who it was, him based on everything in Bad Batch, because his character was Caucasian.
Hmm.
And when I say Caucasian, I mean like the whitest looking white, like not so much as Utapau, but like Tarkin, like that skin tone.
Yeah, I don't know what like race. Well, I know races are different in Star Wars, but I don't really know what the background of Bode is supposed to be.
So he's trying to. He tells Cal, before everything goes to hell, that he's doing what he's doing with the group, basically help give his daughter a better future. And after everything goes to hell, they go their separate ways for a bit, and then Cal goes to Kobo, where Grease is. And this, so I think this is what they originally wanted Bogano to be in terms of a tone setter.
Bogano was the opening planet in the last one.
Yeah, where much there, like
there was nothing but a Jedi temple and some like crocodiles in a swamp.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sums it up pretty good.
There was also Ogdo Bogdo.
What was that?
He's the one. He was the hardest, like the most difficult boss in Jedi Fallen Order.
Oh my god!
And we're gonna get to that because there's a bit of a reprieve or carryover from Fallen Order into Survivor. With that particular beast.
Huh.
So he Cal gives certain like before he gets to Kobo, he's looking around the Mantis, just him and BD, and we get some very cool or some interesting it almost felt like home movies that BD1 has just recorded. And yeah, it's the first time you see anything of the original crew from the first game. And well, one of the key things, the key themes of this game is things are good until ...
Mm-hmm.
So through some chicanery, Cal crashes the Mantis, and you're exploring Kobo. You meet up with Breeze after what's his face from Billy Mandy. Turgle, the best character of this game.
Why is he from Billy and Mandy?
Because that's who the actor is, the voice actor is.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Okay, I can hear that. I get that.
So Richard Horvitz.
Oh.
You might know him as the original Alpha 5 on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Wasn't he also Invader Zim?
Yeah. He was. I could go on a whole.
Oh, you know what? I met him.
Yeah.
Because he was in Skylanders.
Yeah, Chaos.
Yeah. Yeah, that dude.
He was in Psychonauts. He's a very prolific voice actor.
Oh, Turgle. You slay me. But who else do we meet in that encounter?
We meet Gendai.
Yeah.
Who is the first time that we've seen a race or the race that Dirge.
Who's canon now? Well, they're canon.
Yeah. The Gendai. Yeah.
Which is wild. I guess he was also maybe in a comic too referenced.
But... Yeah, Dirge. Well, Dirge is not the character that we're talking about.
Right, right.
Dirge is the character who he was originally Legends material, but then he was originally part of Clone Wars back in 2003. The Gendy Tartakovsky,
the miniseries.
Yeah, the miniseries. And this particular Gendai is the leader of the Crimson Raiders.
Which is not to be confused with, isn't there like a Crimson Raiders?
Sorry. Yeah, I got confused. The Bedlam Raiders.
Right. Crimson is the Force Awakens guy, right?
Crimson Raiders. I honestly don't know. There's so much lore in Star Wars. There's and this is coming from someone who was eating up all the, figuratively eating up all the, like that. Just so much lore. You just throw a dart at a dartboard, and no matter where you hit, no matter where the dart landed. It would hit a point where something interesting, something noticeable happened in the canon of Star Wars Legends.
True. Especially how now they're so deep now. I was going to say earlier when you were like, I was expecting certain characters. Excuse me. I have lost track of so many, What am I trying to say? I've lost track of like where we are in the timeline sometimes. Because like even with Mandalorian, I found myself being like, where the fuck you're mentioning people I don't even know. And then I have to put it in the perspective of like, well, Jabba's dead. So all of this happens after six. But and then it's just like, it's crazy.
So it's gotten to a point where Disney has had to, or Lucasfilm has had to release an actual like full on timeline of what occurs when. The way that they've the way they phrased it with their comics line, or their like their one shots during their certain ages. So it's like the prequel stuff is Age of the Republic. The original trilogy is Age of the Rebellion. And the sequel is Age of the Resistance. So.
Okay. And now they're going to be extending into like High Republic, right?
Well, that's the thing. When Cal reunites with Grease, there's some tension based on the falling out that happened after the book or the tie-in novel that explained why Grease looks the way he does, or not in terms of, or at least why Grease has a robot hand. They ran into some trouble when they were helping someone. And it was an interesting book. But
I was trying to remember if that happened in Fallen Order, and I couldn't remember.
No, it happened. So this, like, it's 5 years after Jedi Fallen Order, this game.
God. Yes, right.
So
things happen.
Yeah.
We need to bridge that gap somehow.
Cal discovers a droid ZNA4 or Z that was used during the High Republic era, and turns out that, and I love the way that did you notice the area where you meet, where you and Z like go back to the surface? Mm-hmm. Did you see that area before everything happened? Before you like basically before you encounter you meet Ravis.
Yeah.
You see it looks like it's just tarped off. Like it's just, no one knows what it is, so they're just tarping it off and just covering it and all that. So once you and Z rot, like, or Cal helps Z out, and through his special force ability where he can see the past, or he can sense echoes of where certain things have been, we see him see through Z's point of view. Z gives Cal a tuner device, and she was ordered to activate the Force Array, but got trapped because of the plot. Plot attacked for once, and for massive damage. And once he gets there, he encounters the thing that I called around this time last year, when the trailer dropped, or when one of the trailers dropped for this game at the Game Awards. I predicted that the survivor is going to be like, is the trailer where Cal is, or the trailer ends with Cal standing guard near the Bacta tank. And we were thinking, you and me, we were like, who could be? I just said, I just threw a Hail Mary and just said, it's someone from the High Republic era because they're pushing that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
that whole plot through the Echoes takes place in the High Republic era.
Yeah. Once Cal gets to the Forest Array, he senses Force visions of Centauri Kree and Dagon Gera, who
is kind of our big bad.
Well, that's the thing. There are so many.
There's a lot of villains, a lot of enemies.
There are a lot of swerves and just things that are. You think it's gonna be this guy? No, it's actually this guy. You think it's gonna be this guy? No, it's actually this guy. This guy? No, he's not. No. This guy's not the main threat. He's here. He's gone. That's very confusing.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. Like I kind of, because I knew I was on like a time crunch with it and everything, I kind of followed along like, how much longer do I have with a YouTube video? And so, that kind of probably ruined me a bit for like the swerves.
So I said I was like earlier that I was what I watched so much of the like marketing material for this.
Mm.
I did all that. Yet when I was playing the game at first, like when I switched from PC to my Xbox, because the PC version is still not, it's still not 100% playable, like without issue. So when I end up, or when I would get to a certain point, so that was basically, I was watching a Twitch stream of the game, and I'm playing the game, watching the Twitch stream, and I realized that, or once it gets to a certain point, that turns out that I thought the streamer was farther along than me. Mm-hmm. So like, nope, can't do this. Gotta cut that. So, we see, Cal activates the array. Freeze Dagon Gera in hopes that they can join forces. And just to add to this, because it is it's pretty plot central. Dagon Gera he's one armed.
Hmm.
So, and we, you have, Once you free him, freeze him, immediately turns to dark side.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well for Cal.
And I just, and the thing is, the way, like, so, the original, the scene, or the moment where Dagon goes to the dark side, it shows, it was basically, I think it was just an easy way, like, to explain just how the whole thing worked, the process works. Where originally in the EU, it was synthesized kyber crystals. Whereas in the Disney canon that I've since called, or I've since referred to as Danon. Dagon turns to dark side, removes his kyber crystal, makes it suffer, turns the kyber crystal, makes it to the dark side by breaking its will, making it feel pain and all that, all very metal stuff. And Ravis shows up because it turns out him and Dagon are buds.
Yeah, from like way back in the day.
Yeah, because Gendai are very old. Like they have a very long lifespan.
And they're like super loyal, like kind of like samurai type.
Yeah, Ravis is in, he wants he wants the fight. Like, he wants the fight of his life, and then he wants, it's like, fight, best fight of my life, and then I'll die, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Because it's like their whole thing, if you haven't, if you've never seen Dirge or Ravus, they're like these giant octopus beings that, like, shield themselves in big suits, and they don't, they, like, can't die. So they, like, yearn for an honorable death.
So, after this, Bode shows back up, and he, Cal, and Grease take the Mantis, go to Jeddah, where we go back, we meet a character, and we meet up with, we have a reunion with two other characters. So we meet Eno Cordova, finally, after, I assumed he was dead in the first game.
Me too. Yeah, that was surprising.
Because it's like, if he didn't, if he left, if he, the scene on, or the scene where he, where the when Cal is having his trip, when, like, making his, trying to find his Kyber Crystal for the new lightsaber, it's implied that Cordova left BD on Bogano and just died. And he's working with Seer and Marin to rebuild the Jedi archives, and are working with the Hidden Path, which was brought up in the Obi-Wan show, the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. And the big selling point of Candelore and the Kobo Abyss is that it's free of the Sith, free of the, basically, it's just like a summer home that once you get there, once I get to the summer home, everything's all good.
Everything's good. It's a long journey, a long car ride, but once you get to stretch your legs, everything's good.
And we get to see, the scene of the Neil, who were the villains of, at least I think, the first phase of the High Republic.
Hmm.
And because they've been attacked, they destroy every compass they have. And Dagan became obsessed with Tantalor, believing it was his. And Centauri Kree had trapped him in the back of the tank where Cal found him. And there are three unaccounted for compasses that will get our heroes to Tantalor and free of the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where things start to ramp up and reach a crescendo.
I mean, I'd say that for the most part, you're kind of just, you go through the various planets again, collecting compasses for a while.
Well, the whole thing is, or at least it's like this for me, because just the way I was playing it, it felt like it was on a steady, like going up a, like slowly rising up to, like a very, like, basically, like skiing up a mountain.
Okay.
And Cal and Marin decide to become there are some moments where Cal and Marin they get together, and I mean, everyone was shipping them from the beginning of Marin's introduction into Fallen Order.
Oh yeah.
And then
they did the fan service, Alan.
Yeah.
They did that for us. They didn't have to do it, but they did it for us.
So,
can I butt in with a question regarding the spot we're at right now?
Yeah.
So, one thing that I wanted to touch on in all of this was the kind of base building aspect of the game.
On Kobo.
Yeah, and like we don't have to go through all of the characters and stuff that you meet and what they do, but my main question for you was during this time, which got a little fetch questy, like, hey, let's go to another planet, let's go retrace our steps and with our new force powers and find that compass. Did you keep going back to Kobo and popping in and talking to the people?
Yeah, I'd get a new ability, I'd end up going back to Kobo and seeing, because they're this game, while the game is very much still a Metroidvania in certain aspects, mixed with the dark, like a Metroidvania Souls-like,
mm-hmm.
It still has the Metroidvania elements. So I still went back to Kobo, and I mean, obviously you're going back to Kobo many times because that's the kind of the heart of where things are going on. And yeah, I kept going back to the saloon, and it was one of the things I really enjoyed about the game was that they put so much dedication into this. Like, when normally when I'd hear baseball, like if I hear a pitch, like a game pitched, like sold on, like a feature sold as base building or managing a community or interacting with a community,
mm-hmm. You don't really care.
I immediately think of Fallout 4 and how that turned me off of Fallout 4.
Yeah.
So
it's not for everybody, definitely. I mean, shout out to Josh, who's going crazy over Stardew Valley again. Like, anyone who can get sucked into a thing like that, you have my my utmost respect. But yeah, I remember when this came out, and actually DJ, or before it was gonna come out, and like I said, I wasn't following a lot of the marketing, and DJ tweeted something about the base building looking like a cool thing. And I was just like, how the fuck is that going to work? Like, it is, yeah, it's a Metroidvania. You're just kind of going around these different areas. But I like that they like, the certain characters you meet help you build, like, just this totally, like, the amount of times I was worried that the events of the game were going to kill off, like, oh, when is the level when the whole fucking cantina is going to explode?
Yeah, and it doesn't happen. That's, and it doesn't, the great thing.
It doesn't happen. You have a perfectly protected homestead full of awesome characters that go, like, I tried to go around and I didn't do all the bounties like you had suggested to me, but I did, like, I went and I found all of the fish guy, and I went and I found, like, the DJ people, and, like, You fill up your cantina with all these different things. I tried the plant stuff at the top floor for a while. And it just feels lived in, and you just get this second family. Like, of course, these Jedi games are full of, like, the Grease and,
Deer,
all of their Marin. Names. Yes, them. Like, BD, that's your one. Family. BD.
Darth,
yeah.
Vader.
He's there. They're your family. But now I feel like if another game came and I didn't have all those people still there, it would feel weird. Like, they're going to have to, I mean, I know that we're going to see that there's a, yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about it. So after Cal and Marin, become one, Cal and Bode head towards the Lucre Hulk that Cal notices upon crashing on Kobo earlier in the game. And
giant fortress from the Clone Wars. A Separatist fortress.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, Lucre Hulk is. Yeah, the ship that, basically the ship that Anakin blew up. That the, now this is pod racing. Like, I'm pretty sure that.
Is that really what the Trade Federation thing?
The Lucre Hulk, yeah, the bagel type ships.
Oh my god, I didn't realize that's what that was. I just thought it was like a big domey thing. Now this is pod racing. Yippee.
So is there that Cal encounters Ravis and Dagon, and this is where they depart the story through death?
And you get your really cool jump launch ability.
Oh, yeah.
These abilities were awesome.
Yeah, and there's actually a moment that I had mentioned to Raul when I finished the game.
Mm-hmm.
I said, all right, I was trying to be vague about it in the group chat to not spoil it.
Mm.
But Raul was like, you can tell with Bode when, or because Dagon, kind of like at a certain point, Dagon paralyzes, like makes you and Bode see like your worst nightmare, or it's like a very bad, basically a bad trip. And just let me just say that Dagon is a beast, despite looking like a goth kid. Like, there's a really cool thing that happens whenever you're fighting him in a boss battle. And it's basically like the phantom limb phenomenon, like the phantom limb phenomenon.
Oh yeah, when he like literally has a ghost arm.
Yeah, that was a brilliant plan, like just showing, like, and again showing how much of, just hammering home how much the Force is a thing in this universe. Just taking taking the Phantom Limb, that like t- just taking that idea and literally having a Phantom Limb, like just made up of the blue part of like the Force stuff.
I do want to take a moment and shit on.
the progression stuff within that Lucre Hulk area.
No.
Or is this the thing you had mentioned that when you having to double back, or basically losing the experience points?
Oh well, that's bogus anyway. But that I understand, because it's a Souls-like. Like I have to understand that that's just a. Oh god, I totally forgot about that. Thanks for making me mad again. just those. Oh god, no. I was gonna shit on the Dagon boss fight for a second, because it does that garbage like clone thing that, like, anytime you ever fight Loki in some kind of video game or any
sorcerer, the multi-form technique.
Yeah, I'm sure it shows up when you fight Mysterio in Spider-Man 2. I bet no matter what it happens. It's just like where they make so many, because it happens in Ultimate Alliance when you fight Mysterio. Just making clones of yourself. I hate it.
At least where I'm at right now in Spider-Man 2, Mysterio is actually a reformed.
Oh, you're in Far From Home Mysterio?
No, he's okay, so Mysterio in Spider-Man 2, and I'll just say this, like, he's basically running a I would say the first experience you have with him is as when you're playing as Miles, and you're doing some like virtual reality stuff, and you're just like you're doing DJing stuff, and it's like really cool, and then everything goes crazy, and you get lost in the simulation, and like it's really good, really entertaining.
That's sweet. I gotta play that fucking game.
And the thing is, it's basically it becomes like a regular activity you have to do throughout the game. And it's basically the equivalent of time trials.
Oh, but okay.
They're really fun.
Huh. Well, good. I'm glad, and I hope that they don't use that tired mechanic, because I just freaking, I hate that clone garbage. Like, oh, which one's the real one? Oh, I'm gonna have to smack them all. Because honestly, that made me, I did get through that boss fight on my normal difficulty, and I gave it my all, but it was tough.
So, speaking of that, after you get to, you go back to Jedha with the crew, and then, boom, betrayal. Bode is working for the enemy. Kills Cordova.
Mm. Cold blood just blasts him where he stands.
He's not only an Imperial spy, but a Jedi who has fallen to the dark side. It was at this point where I thought, like, that this whole, like, middle act, everything is going to hell, was, it kind of felt like it hit a high that I had a feeling it wasn't going to reach that level of, like, that height again, like, in the rest of the story.
Oh, God, no. It's on a freaking...
Like, it's a great reveal. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah. No, but I didn't.
Raul mentioned that when he talked to Bode after the first fight with you and Bode have with Dagon, the way he's emoting and talking in the Mantis, he's definitely seen some stuff that is, like, it's starting to get, like, you can make an argument that point in the story when that happens, kind of sets everything up to happen. Sets everything to happen with Bode killing Cordova, the Empire attacking Jedha, Seer dies by the ultimate opportunist, Darth Vader.
The ultimate opportunist. He's like, welp.
It's like I gotta get my heat back. You beat me in Fallen Order. You tried to drown me. I gotta get my win back.
I will say, so this is a good time to jump onto your questions about Darth Vader.
Yeah, what was he doing here? Why was he didn't need to be here?
He didn't need to be here, and it felt arguably dumber than it does in Rogue One. I keep name dropping Rogue One, but, like, Rogue One at least, like, across the board led into New Hope, and it tried something with that. But in this, it was just like, when he showed up in Fallen Order, I think everyone was kind of expecting, oh, maybe he'll show up because it's his timeline, and, like, you know, we've kind of hinted at him. But when he showed up in this, it was just like, why would he be there?
Yeah.
Out of everything going on, what are the odds that he shows up right where Seer is, all alone, and why did he even have to come? Like, he could just send an army.
He could send all the Inquisitors. There's just so many questions where, like, if you think about it too hard, it'll make your head hurt. But if you do try to even lightly think about it, if I think about it this way, it can make sense this way, but no, that still doesn't work.
No, still not. and it kind of made it feel like it hindered things a bit.
Yeah, it felt like
fan service for no reason.
Yeah, because the game, or the game was building up Dagon, Gera as a possible big bad, Ravis as a possible big bad.
Mm-hmm. And then right then you got that boat reveal and you're like, wow, everything that I thought. And like we said, it was so, it was done really well that I just, I mean, I tend to fall for things that people then tell me, oh man, you didn't see that coming. It's so badly written, but I didn't see the boat thing coming. So then you got to throw in this fucking guy. And I was just like upset to see Darth Vader. Like, it seemed like one of those decisions where if you asked a dev, they'd be like, yeah, Disney told us that we needed to have Vader in there. And you just get sad. Definitely brought the room down. And how did you feel about the fight? The four-phase fight, Alan. It's four fucking phases, Alan.
So I was playing it, but pretty much playing on medium difficulty.
Yeah.
I just had to dial it back all the way to very easy.
Me too. I started playing on story mode. And I brought it back. But then I'll, just to jump ahead a little bit, in the final boss battle, I also put it on baby's difficulty. Because for some fucking reason, this game is like, well, we're going to amp up the difficulty curve for some reason. And it gets so hard out of the blue.
Yeah, the game is not proper, like it's not balanced well, as well as it should be.
Yeah, after that Jedha,
Darth Vader, the Darth Vader fight was here, which I will say with the change in perspective, in character perspective, from going from Cal to Seer, because Cal passes out after getting just there are a lot of plot holes with this game the more I think about it. Like Cal gets knocked out after the fight with Bode. Like Bode runs away and Cal gets concussed or something.
Or something. And then shows back up.
Yeah, you switch to Seer, who is just destroying everything that's there.
Has cool powers, has a cool like new set.
I felt like I was playing as Count Dooku, in terms of sword fighting.
I get that.
Like it felt very much like that, mixed in with the way the Jedi characters are handled in Battlefront, like the dice Battlefront games.
Huh. Yeah, where it's like you can just kind of tear through things. There's a whole lot of skill.
Yeah, it's like play as a Jedi, and you just destroy everything.
Uh huh.
Whereas when you're playing as Cal earlier, like from every point in that game, aside from playing as Seer, there's risks.
Mm-hmm.
Like. There's a moment where Seer basically cuts through, like, it sounds like I'm exaggerating when I say five stormtroopers, but no, it's like you're just kind of churning through them like they're butter, or like they're battle droids. And I didn't, the Darth Vader boss fight was very, very frustrating.
Yeah.
Not balanced well.
But. It was, I guess it was fun. Not balanced well, but I enjoyed learning the patterns. And then it was like, yeah, actually, it's just going to be really fucking hard, though. Four phases.
Yeah. And it doesn't help that he's thoroughly throwing the data discs at you.
Right. He's just hurting, adding insult to injury.
And, like, you just get pulled by him. Over to then just get stuck in an animation loop.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about him anymore.
Okay. So from here, Cal uses the locator beacon that he gave to Bode earlier in the game, and Cal grease. Marin and BD-1 go to an ISB, an Imperial Security Bureau base, who, and once Cal infiltrates the bureau, that felt weird to say, but just, you know what I say. Bode reveals that he worked in intelligence for the Jedi Order during the Clone Wars, and after Inquisitors killed his wife, Bode made a deal with the commander, Lank Denvik.
Who, once again, I thought was going to be like, oh, here's the next bad for, like, the next game.
No.
Nope.
And the game makes Bode, like, you're made to hate Bode, and you have every good reason to, but when you realize that it felt a bit like the first Bioshock, where, like, but the would you kindly reveal.
Mm-hmm.
And with it, and where I'm at with this, in terms of comparison, the natural act you'd feel after what happened in the previous part of the story would want you to go find Bode and kill him, or mm-hmm. tear through every Imperial at the ISB base. And that's why Bode went there. He wanted Cal to take out everything there, so he'd be able to escape. And you unleash your inner fury as Cal. Inner fury brought to you by G Fuel.
Brought to you by the dark side.
Did
this surprise you?
Yeah, okay, so this felt like they were leaning back into what you would do in like Force Unleashed.
Yes. It was like a Spartan rage.
Yeah. Actually that's an even better way of putting it, considering Stig. Stig was heavy on, like, heavily involved with this game. And God of War 3 and all that. So
this causes some implications for definitely the next game, and
yeah,
like what he feels now.
Through sheer luck, Cal finds recording left behind by Centauri Kree, explaining that the arrays on Kobo can be used to open an alternative path through the abyss. And during this whole time, you're using your different stances, in addition to the ones you've earned throughout the last game, and one of the stances you get on Jedha is a blaster stance, where you can basically do it's basically what Seer's stance was in terms of the lightsaber.
That was my go-to stance the whole game.
So mine was, ironically, I kept bouncing between, I kept alternating between single saber, dual saber, and double blade.
Okay.
And once Cal, Marin, and Grease get to Tantalor after going through the abyss, we get the boss fight with Bode, and I have to ask, because there's a certain point where, and this happens at the ISB base, you're told to press both thumbsticks to unleash your inner anger, and it asks you again, and I have to ask, did you let Bode kill you? Because what I did the first time, I got prompted with the press unleash your rage. I chose not to, just to see what happened.
Okay.
And I think it was just me giving the game too much credit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I expected there to be an alternative, like, dual endings.
Oh, yeah.
And instead, I just got choked out like a little bitch.
So I, when you asked this question, when I heard that this was one of your questions, I thought that you meant like where you get, you know, where you pass out when you first fight him. Cause you're like not supposed to win that fight, but you can fight him to the end, I believe. And I kind of did a, I was reminded of in Hellblade when one of the final bosses you're supposed to lose, but I just kept fighting for like 20 minutes. And so I was like, not again. And I had let myself like die at that time.
So,
but you're saying in the final boss with him,
the final battle on in the Jedi Temple on Tantalor.
Mm-hmm.
I got to the part after after the Brit like he, after Marin saves Kata, who is Bode's daughter. He goes, he tries to kill Cal. And you're told to unleash your inner anger or unleash your dark side, so to speak. I'm paraphrasing. And I just and your health is slowly being or it's being deteriorated, and if you don't press it, you're gonna game over, man.
Mm.
So I had a feeling something would happen if I didn't do anything, like something else would happen. But no, I got game overed. Again, because I was giving the game too much credit.
Yeah, no, that would be definitely too much credit to think that there's going to be a split there in multiple endings, but it would have been cool. I think I probably did. I'm looking up the boss fight now to see. Oh, okay, hold on. I forgot about this part. So he's slamming, he's wailing on you, and
yeah,
you embrace the darkness. All right. So you're saying that you didn't press the buttons?
No, I let him beat me up, like, beat my face in.
That's funny. Yeah, no, I embraced my darkness. But funnily enough, when you embrace the darkness and you're on normal difficulty, it's not like anything gets fucking easier. Everything just stays goddamn hard. It's so flipping hard. And that blaster, the reason why I like blaster stance is because more often than not, maybe it's because I'm stretching. Maybe it's because I leveled it up, but your blaster shot tends to break through the shield, so it would count as full damage and not just knockback. So I enjoyed that from the blaster stance, but I don't think that worked with Bode. And he just kept on sucking. There's just nothing. Those boss fights are so. It was my little taste at a Souls-like there, where I was just like, well, this is why I don't play them. If people think that, if this is like a nod to people that really do like Souls-likes and think that Jedi games aren't enough, this is why I don't play them. It fucked me up.
Okay, so yeah, and I brought up the blaster stance because that proves to be Bode's undoing, as at a certain point Bode is force choking, using force choke on Marin, and he's got does he have Cal in a choke hold or a choke while doing it, or is it the other way around? Because a certain point where Cal is, he's being like, he has him in like a rear, like a choke while choking Marin with the force.
Ooh.
Because TLDR, Bode gets shot through the heart and he's to blame because he gave Love a bad name.
So I'm watching it. He has Marin in a choke. Cal knees him in the face. She throws a knife at Bode. And then he tries to shoot, but his gun backfired. To which Cal shoots him fatally.
Yeah, and thankfully his daughter was not able to see it.
Yeah.
because, and then like so, a Jedi funeral is held for Seer and Cordova, and it does. There's a weird thing with the cinematic, like the cutscene, where it's played out in terms of like everyone's moving, at regular speed, like double speed. Mm-hmm. But Cal is just standing still.
Oh yes, no, I do remember that part. Yeah, the like time lapse.
Yeah, and
I thought that ending was really great. Just the way that they do that.
Yeah.
And it's like I also want to note, like, before, I know that I played this game late. I finished it. The reason we are recording now is because I finished it like a month ago, a little under a month ago.
And I finished it like a week or two after, a couple weeks after it released.
Yeah. And it's so by the time I had finished it, I knew already that there were plans to make a third one. I had like heard stuff about it.
So,
but it was, I can see that it would definitely open it up for hopes of a sequel. And I'm happy that we're getting one based on what I saw.
Yeah, so Cal, Marin, and Grease decide to adopt Kata, and they're basically kind of fridged for the foreseeable future until the next, the third game.
What does fridged mean?
Basically just like putting the characters basically putting them away for now, and then just...
Oh, like shelved.
Yeah.
Putting them on ice, so to speak.
Yeah. So, Stig Asmussen said that he planned the Jedi series to be a trilogy. And in September of this month, or September of this year, I'm very tired, it's almost midnight, Cameron Monaghan confirmed that a third game was in development. But Stig Asmussen has left Respawn, or he's no longer involved with the game or with the series. So before we get to where we see the third game going without Stig, what is Graydon, what is your favorite moment of this game?
My favorite moment was definitely the fighting the big drill thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because the introduction. Okay, so I felt that particular area, or that particular subsection where you're just doing portal, flying through portals, it felt very much like the flying scene from the first Superman movie.
Okay.
And I really hope someone makes a edit where they just swap the music out for the, basically just swap the music out from Jedi Survivor, and just replace it with the flying scene from Superman the movie.
I gotta go watch this scene now. I think I kind of can picture it, but
it's like the can you read my mind scene with Lois Lane.
Oh jeez, no, you're moving away now from my frame of reference.
No, so the scene, I'm just gonna break it down for a movie that came out about 45 years ago. Superman is flying. Superman takes Lois Lane on a flight through Metropolis, and while this is happening, Lois Lane is having this little introspection moment in her head, her inner narrator is going off, and it's just very stuff that you wouldn't think that would be in a movie at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And not in a good way.
Oh, that's not good.
It's not that it's not good. It feels weird. It feels a little bit out of place with the whole thing.
Hmm.
I know it felt like it's equivalent with the song from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, Cheer Up Charlie.
Yeah. Yeah, very much like that.
It just kind of ruins the flow.
Yeah, just... Yeah, yeah.
What are we doing here? Who let this pass? Yippee! Yeah, this is pod racing.
Not gonna have a movie end with Grandpa Joe yelling, yippee.
Oh, that. that yippee. Yippee! Oh, Grandpa Joe. What a monster you are. No, but so yeah, I really enjoyed that part. Mainly because it was just like a really cool mix of like their powers together. And any one of those like kind of Mirror's Edge-esque, like just constant running. It was free running. It was doing like, I mean, we're spoilers on all these force things. It was the dash and the double jumps and the
It was basically just platforming.
Like, yeah,
Star Wars, it was good Star Wars platforming.
Yeah, it was a really, really good platforming segment, and like it got hard at times, and then there were like similarly to the speeder section when we after Bo's betrayal, it's like it's just this crazy set piece where you're really taken into Star Wars again, which reminded me kind of the AT-AT part in Fallen Order. Remember where like everything was just kind of blowing up around you, like your assault on Kashyyyk?
Oh yeah.
Climbing that AT-AT and getting in there. That's like the big thing I remember from Fallen Order. It's just those set pieces where you really feel like you're in it. That's what those games are all about. Like that's what people like to shit on like new Star Wars material, but sometimes you just get those beautiful bits. And you're just like, this is what I want to be in. Like, this is the world I want to be engrossed in. And, oh, it's fantastic. So that was really cool. And it was more character development for Merrin and what she can do as a witch of Dathomir. And, yeah, I mean, I think that might have either ended or began with them kissing, which was just like, all right, we're on a ride. Here we go. So it was just a great moment. And like I had said to you earlier, that I was surprised you didn't nominate that for best moment. But like you said, that you kind of had gotten there so early and we hadn't seen that yet that you didn't want to spoil it. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's why I put like for the moment, for the part where, or the moment where Bode betrays everyone or betrays the group. And like that's why I simply have that whole the entire area, like that entire sequence, labeled as just tragedy.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with The Mandalorian season two episode six or something, titled The Tragedy, which is.
Was that much of a tragedy? I can't even remember that.
It was actually, ironically, it was the episode where Boba Fett came back.
Oh, God. Which wasn't and bad. It wasn't bad.
He's my favorite moment in this game.
Yeah, which you told me about. Well,
I didn't outright say it. I just said, hey, right. do you try to do all the bounty hunter missions at the saloon? And yeah, I think the reward you get is Boba Fett showing up. And yeah, everyone was saying that it's the best use of Boba Fett since Disney bought Star Wars, bought Lucasfilm,
because he's like scary, right?
Yeah, he's only in there for 2 minutes, maybe less than 2 minutes, and that is the effective way to use Boba Fett.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be there long. He's just an intimidating presence that you don't want to fuck with.
I will say I was a little disappointed that it wasn't D. Baker voicing him.
Oh, he talks and it sounds different.
It's Tamara Morrison.
Oh, come on. there's a like to go back to the Forrest Whitaker thing, like that should not, just because he was the person doesn't mean that he has to be the voice. Like, we know those clones and Boba Fett as D. Baker. It's ridiculous to do it as anyone else.
Yeah, because like in Force and Fallen Order, D. Baker is all the clones.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's like in flashback and all that, and then Boba Fett.
Isn't he the droids too?
Oh, D. Baker?
Yeah, I think he's the voice of the droids. Which, like, he's here in the game on he's doing voices on this game.
Yeah, yeah.
So they could have just said, hey, do your Australian thing again. That's weird.
Yeah, and it's I'm only gonna bring this up because because there's a character in this game that reminds me of that's basically basically the character is this character but not this character, so the DJ Rex character, like S character.
Yeah,
and I'm saying that because of the passing of Paul Reubens.
Oh, wait, is he in it?
No, he. Okay, so
he plays a droid for Star Tours, I remember.
Yeah, he played, or he was the voice of DJ Rex on Star Tours, and that character was like, there's a certain point when that, like, when Star Wars became even more of a cultural touchstone, there was more nostalgia for even that, like for the rides and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you can see what they were going for with the type of personality of the character.
Of, I'm sorry, which one? Like, who do you think he should have been in one order in this one?
Oh, no, I'm just saying that because there's a robot that looks like DJ Rex.
Oh, okay, I see. There's a similar, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Is he the bartender? Because I really like that bartender.
Oh, no, he's not in the game.
No, but who's the one that looks like him? Is it the bartender?
No, it's the Cantina DJ.
Oh, okay, all right, okay.
That's basically, DJ. That's...
It makes sense.
Yeah.
I love that bartender. He was a fun-ass character. I really loved all those people in the cantina. And now, like, since we're kind of at the end there, I can mention, like, Grease does say, oh, we got a franchise. Like, we can put a cantina here on Tantalor. But I just, it's not going to bring all the characters. Like, it's one of those, it's the sad truth about games where certain things will carry over, but they're not going to carry over everything. And we're probably never going to see half those people again from the cantina. But I had a great time with them. They're definitely, that whole group is definitely in the running for best ensemble for me. And I'm probably going to fight for them because it's just such a great family.
Oh, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this character up because I nominated, I think I nominated him for best moment for game of the year. Rick the door technician.
Oh my god.
They got us. They got us good.
They certainly did.
Hey, check out this guy. He's gonna try to kill you, and you're gonna think, oh, it's a big bad boss fight.
Did you see the interview with a developer about that?
I think I may have. I don't recall.
It was funny the way that they explained it. He's like, most people, when they get to him, they've just done this big fight on the hangar, which is like multiple waves. You have like no health left.
I was like, here's a nice little joke of a character for you.
And he says they were doing it in the beta testing, and he watched the tester see this person, like a boss battle show up, and he just sighs so deeply, like, I'm fucked. And then he goes and he kills him in one strike. I think I might have force pushed him off a ledge. And he laughed so hard he fell out of his chair.
Okay, yeah, I did see this. Yeah. Yeah, there are actually videos, like people actually try to like save Rick the door technician. Like they tried to they'll grab him with the force grab, and
oh my god,
basically put him on the other side of the chasm where he can't get you. So like he has no blaster. He just has a stun baton.
He doesn't need to die.
Yeah, like people don't want him to die. They want him to stay alive. So before
going, tell the tale, Rick.
Yeah, live to tell the tale. Yeah. Okay, so before we wind down this recording, as I mentioned, Stig Asmussen is. He left Respawn. Where do you see a third game going without Stig?
I think it would be kind of dumb if they didn't get his input on, like, you've got a franchise and you've got a story at hand. And I think it's even more so than like, oh, we did, for example, just, I know it's Star Wars, but just for example, Force Awakens happens, then Last Jedi has a different person, and we didn't think about the last story. Like, there was no consulting, but this is a little different.
There was no overrider.
Right. But this is a little different because it's like your third and maybe final one in the trilogy. I know no one at EA is thinking it's the final one, but at least if you've already got two full established games of lore that carry into each other, and like you just have to. You have to keep carrying that. So I think you're definitely going to get something that makes sense. My thought, though, is if they really want to throw it all out the window and be like, well, we got to start from something, they'll make you play as Kata. Because I think we're definitely going to see like a trainer, a master apprentice type thing. But I would like to keep playing as Cal. But maybe in this whole thing, it's like, well, we're gonna the Cal story is done. We gotta go on to the next thing.
I can imagine it being a God of War Ragnarok scenario.
Okay, where you got a back and forth between them.
Yeah, but I imagine it would be okay. So the first game was like Fallen Order was Cal going through his trauma and regaining his connection to the Force. Now, and it's actually brought up during the story that Seer mentions everything that acknowledges what happens with Vader in the time in between the two games.
Mm-hmm.
And mentions that Cal is going to have to one day have a similar situation that Seer had with Vader.
Yeah, because so, like you've never had Cal fight Vader.
Well, right? not exactly the exact situation, but something like the equivalent of the situation. So, remember in Fallen Order where Seer is accessing the dark side. And starts tearing up the place on the Inquisitor home base.
Yeah, vaguely yes.
That whole thing, like that whole plot thread, is what, like the internal conflict.
Mm.
She has in that game. Is what Cal goes through in Jedi Survivor.
Okay. So do you think that because like Jedi Survivor was Seer's end, this will be Cal's end in a similar like just discovering their purpose? Like they've discovered their purpose and now they have to fulfill it.
I mean, it's hard to tell where the where things could go, because they try that the game ends with literally ends with them trying to figure out a way to get to contact the Hidden Path so they could have Tenelor be a safe shelter from the Empire.
Right. It's kind of like you're going to have an army now, and you're going to have, legit, but you're going to have like these people, like you have followers, like basically you're rebuilding some kind of Jedi Order.
I wouldn't really say that. It's more of hiding like just victims of the Empire.
Okay.
Like those targeted, like, but it would be interesting if they use this little nest egg and just use it down the line.
Like, what do you mean?
So, like, so after Clone Wars gets canceled and after season 6 when Disney buys Lucasfilm,
mm-hmm.
There are certain things that were mined, not exactly mined, that were used, like, there are certain things that were used from that in later media, like, things from that, like, the inhibitor chips plot line that was used in the final season of Clone Wars, or the final season of the original Clone Wars, rather than season 7.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's, and everything with that, and the Kaminoans, and carrying over to Bad Batch.
So you think that this third game should carry things over to, like, Star Wars movies or shows or something?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that they now have a area of the Star Wars universe, or the Star Wars galaxy, where everything in that area in Tenelor is hidden from the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So, if they have to explain something, or if there's a moment where they want to try some stuff, Kobo Abyss and Tenelor and all that, it could be used very well in other forms of media, like movies, television, animation, games.
Yeah, like just use this timeline as like a reference point.
Yeah.
For certain things. Yeah. Kind of like how everything in Ahsoka revolved around space whales. And they were just like, rebels. You'd get it if you watched that thing. But then again, like, I feel like Ahsoka, I don't know, I feel like I could have not watched Rebels and understood that. Probably Clone Wars too. Like, it served as a good show on its own, aside from all the other stuff, but I digress. Yeah, I'm looking forward to a third game. I think that there's a lot of cool things they could do with it. And I mean, it opens up all that High Republic stuff, which we've only really seen in books, I think. Like, there's canon, there's Danon stuff, but it's books so far. And I know that, I think they said that Rey's movie might touch on it, or there's going to be a different movie about the High Republic era. But so far, this is all we've got. So this is where you establish some stuff.
Oh, did you notice a certain voice from one of the, like, from the trial rooms in the High Republic stuff?
Oh my god. No. I didn't do all of them.
Did you pick up any of the sensing of the Force echoes?
Some of them. Yeah, who was there?
Nolan North.
Really?
Yeah, he's not credited as like an actual like character, but it's like High Republic Jedi 1 or something. And Nolan North is clearly voicing that character.
Huh. Well, he's got to get that bread.
Yeah, got to get that dough.
Nonstop.
And speaking of nonstop, that is where this podcast is going to stop because it is almost 12:30.
Yeah.
Graydon, thank you for joining me on this podcast.
This was great. I'm so happy we got to finally tackle this. Again, I'm sorry it's a spoiler cast 10 months late, but this is it was a year that's full of big games that we just didn't get to at the right time. And I think we would have wanted to do this had we finished it in April or whatever. But yeah, I was happy I got to talk with the Star Wars expert about it.
And yeah, I don't know when this is going to drop. This podcast is going to drop sometime within the month of December.
Yeah.
Maybe January at the latest.
Maybe VGUmas.
Yeah, or maybe.
I forget what our timeline looked like there, but we have things in the works.
Yeah, so just check out the website, VGU.tv. Check out the YouTube channel. Check out the podcast feed for a bunch of content. I've been Alamir, and be nice to each other. Bye.
Bye.